Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Governor Mike Dunleavy says next year he'd like to close the billion-plus-dollar state budget gap.
We're going to do the best we can to get as close as possible to closing this gap.
Dunleavy said in February that he wanted to close this budget gap this year. And after issuing line item vetoes in June, he said he planned to close the gap in 2 years. The budget he signed into law relies on roughly $200 million in draws from state savings accounts. And Dunleavy supports paying out full permanent fund dividends under a 1982 state law, which would require another roughly $900 million. Dunleavy also says he's optimistic the legislature will add another $1,400 per person for permanent fund dividends in a third special session this fall. He said that a day after he acknowledged that majorities in both legislative chambers oppose it.
I believe that now that the budget's off the table, the vetoes are off the table the singular focus could be once again on the PFD and providing for a full PFD as per the decades-old calculations.
Members of both legislative majorities have said legislators should consider the future of permanent fund earnings and dividends in a special session. Dunleavy made the remarks in a call with reporters on Tuesday, a day after he announced his decisions on a bill setting dividends and reversing some of his line item vetoes. Dunleavy says he decided to release his budget decisions in a video rather than in a press conference. He cited his criticism of some media coverage of his administration in making the decision. The group has proposed an initiative that would raise taxes on the largest oil companies. An application submitted on Friday would be for legislation called the Fair Share Act. If it's certified and is supported by enough petition signatures, it would be on the ballot next year. Anchorage lawyer Robin Brenna says the state receives less as a share of gross oil sales than it has historically.
We're too low from any perspective. We would be getting a far higher share if we were in Norway, if we were in North Dakota, if we were in any place, pretty much.
The initiative would raise the minimum tax from 4% to between 10 and 15% based on the price of oil. And it would eliminate oil tax credits for the Prudhoe Bay, Kuparuk, and Alpine fields.
There is no reason for Prudhoe Bay, the largest conventional oil field in North America and the crown jewel of Alaska that has been in production for almost 50 years, to be getting credits.
The initiative also would require all the major producers to publicly reveal their revenues and costs in the state. Karen Moriarty is a leading advocate for the oil industry as the president of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. She says fairness is in the eye of the beholder and that the initiative would hurt the industry.
I don't know how any industry in Alaska can sustain a billion-dollar-plus increase in taxes and not have an impact on investment and spending, which then, of course, trickles down to production, which then trickles down to jobs.
Moriarty says more fields would be hit by tax hikes as they are developed in the future. Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer has 60 days to decide whether to certify the initiative application. If it's certified, the petition would require more than 28,000 signatures for the initiative to be placed on the ballot. Three questions related to updating and improving Juneau's arts and culture venues will appear on the municipal ballot. On October 1st, Juneau voters will decide whether to approve a 2% increase in the hotel bed tax rate for 15 years. The city intends to use the money generated to fund improvements to Centennial Hall. Voters will also determine whether the city should issue up to $7 million in bonds to further fund upgrades to Centennial Hall, and separately, if it should provide a $4.5 million grant to contribute to the construction of a new Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Juneau Assembly unanimously approved each of the ballot measures at last night's meeting. Several community members, many of them members of the new JAC Partnership Board that has advocated for the ballot measure, testified in favor. Board co-chair Bruce Patello said afterward their campaign will now focus on building support between now and October 1st.
We'll be upping our game in terms of making sure people are aware of the project and what we believe it will do, not only for the arts, but also, I think, more generally for the economy of the community.
The $4.5 million grant for the new JAC would be paid for from sales tax revenue. The hope is that the grant would attract additional private investment in the project. Supporters say the estimated $26.4 million project to replace the current building will attract more talent and business opportunity to Juneau and be a boon for the local economy. Dennis DeWitt testified against the grant, saying he supports a new arts and culture center, but thinks the private sector should step up and fund it.
This is a want, it's not a need. We've already put in $1 million worth of sales tax. We're going to give them the property. We've taken care of some building issues. If they want to go out and do it with private funds, God bless them.
The city owns both Centennial Hall and the Old Jack. Both are managed by the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. The money raised for Centennial Hall through city bonds would go toward upgrading the aging building's HVAC system, lighting and sound systems, and other projects. If voters approve the hotel bed tax, the city may end up using the money raised to pay down that debt. Similar ballot questions proposed last year failed to make it onto the local ballot. The Juneau Assembly has approved a rate increase to water and wastewater utility rates during each of the next 5 years. A 4% rate increase will take place in January. Then, starting in July 2021, rates will go up by 2% each year for 4 years. Last utility rate increase was in July of last year when rates increased by 8%. City has been gradually raising water and wastewater utility rates to fund improvements to aging infrastructure. Local authorities will seek help investigating the origin of a fire that led to a woman's death last night in the Mendenhall Valley. Capital City Fire and Rescue responded to a home on the 4,000 block of Dogwood Lane to find it filled with smoke and several neighbors performing CPR on a resident in the driveway. Assistant Fire Chief Travis Mead says they were able to put the fire out quickly, in part because neighbors used a fire extinguisher inside before the crew arrived.
Within a few minutes, they were able to finish off and get it knocked down and perform a primary search of the residence to make sure there was no other victim.
Mead says neighbors called 911 around 6:30 p.m. When no one answered the door, they went inside and removed the resident before crews arrived. First responders took over CPR and were able to regain a pulse before transporting her to Bartlett Regional Hospital. At the hospital, she went into cardiac arrest and later died. Authorities have yet to publicly name her. Mead says even though he realizes neighbors were trying to help, no one should enter a structure filled with smoke or fire unless they have protective gear. He says it's lucky that no other injuries occurred.
Unfortunately, even though their efforts were very commendable, it didn't make a difference for this person. And so, you know, the risk is in increasing your number of victims to the fire.
Fire Marshal Dan Jaeger says his investigation so far has revealed that the fire originated on a countertop in the kitchen. They also found a melted appliance that may have been the source. It'll be sent to the Federal Fire Research Laboratory in Maryland for analysis.
They're going to check it out and see if they can better identify what it is and if there was any kind of a product failure that caused the fire.
Jaeger says damage to the home is estimated to be $30,000, mainly due to smoke damage. The home didn't sustain any structural damage, but he does not know if it's insured. Wildfires in south-central Alaska are causing major traffic problems on some of the region's busiest roads, affecting locals, buses filled with tourists, and trucks trying to resupply grocery stores. Due to the fires, both the Parks and Sterling highways have had temporary closures and major backups. As of this afternoon, both the highways were passable, but with heavy delays, according to the Alaska Department of Transportation. But Meadow Bailey with the Transportation Department warns they may close again with little notice.
There's a lot of erratic fire behavior, and so it tends to change very rapidly.
Bailey says travelers should avoid driving through fire areas unless it's absolutely necessary. The closures cause logistical messes for many Alaskans. That includes tourism companies. Josh Howes is president of Premier Alaska Tours, which runs a fleet of over 100 motor coaches. Howes says at about 5 on Sunday night, the wildfire stalled some of his company's buses at Talkeetna Junction with about 1,000 tourists in tow. Most had flights to catch the next day.
We waited and waited, hoping that there would be an opening at some point. And at 11 o'clock at night, we finally had to turn everybody around and go back to Denali or Fairbanks.
Howe says they had to find hotel rooms for their customers in Denali and Fairbanks, a big challenge during peak summer season. A major trucking company is also reporting issues, saying the fires are forcing drivers to pull long hours and change routes. Paul Fries is Vice President of Sales and Marketing for Linden Transport in Alaska.
We're kind of juggling to figure out what's next and surviving and getting through it, but it's been certainly a challenge.
Fries says getting frozen goods to grocery stores on the Kenai has been a big issue. He says some drivers waited on the highway for up to 12 hours trying to get through. A Fred Meyer representative confirmed the delays impacted their Soldotna location, but said the store should be resupplied today. University of Alaska Board of Regents unanimously approved a motion to end financial exigency. The vote overturns a declaration that allowed for the expedited elimination of academic programs and firing of faculty, even those with tenure. UA President Jim Johnson, who recommended the motion to the board, says that a recent change to university funding from the state was a big factor.
The material circumstances that were on the ground when the board declared exigency are markedly different than the material circumstances that we face today. you know, from $136 million reduction in 1 year to 25 in 1 year.
The Board of Regents declared exigency last month when faced with an unprecedented budget cut of $136 million from Governor Dunleavy. While cuts to administration and adjunct faculty have occurred this summer, Johnson says no faculty had been eliminated from the university due to exigency. The governor changed course last week when he signed an agreement with Board Chair John Davies. This agreement outlined a 3-year plan for cuts instead of one. It also halved the total amount of cuts to $70 million. Johnson says he hopes the efforts to transition the University of Alaska from 3 separately accredited universities to 1 will allow for big savings.
We're working hard now on a plan that the Board of Regents directed us to prepare. They'll be considering it at their meeting September 12th and 13th, and that plan would involve substantial administrative cost reduction across the university system and also a reduction in the number of duplicative academic units across the university system.
The vote was 10-0 in favor of ending financial exigency. And finally, taking a look at the extended forecast for the Juneau Borough and Northern Admiralty Island. Tonight, rain likely, lows around 50, east winds to 10 miles per hour. In downtown Juneau and Douglas, rain, Mineral Valley, lows in the mid-40s. Wednesday, scattered rain showers, highs around 60, light winds. Downtown and Mineral Valley, highs in the mid-50s. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Tuesday, August 20th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.